Good afternoon. This is Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska. Today, we've got a really special Alaskan topic. We're going to be talking about the Alaska Pioneer Homes. And if you're like me, I didn't know that much about them. The only time I'd been in there was when we delivered flowers after a wedding because we wanted to share the flowers. So we thought, who lives somewhere that we can give these flowers to? So we dropped them off at the Pioneer Home. So we're going to learn a whole lot more about the Pioneer Home today, and I just wanted to invite our audience. If you know somebody in the Pioneer Home and you want to give them a shout out, this would be great. I'm sure they're listening to us over at the Anchorage Pioneer Home. Or if you know somebody who works there and you want to say hi, or if you just don't know how the Pioneer Homes work, well, we've got some experts here in the studio who can really lay that out for you. So let me introduce our guests in the studio. We have Rich Seville. Rich is the administrator. That's your official title.
It is, yes.
We have Bob Montague.
Hello, everybody.
And Bob is the activities director, so he plans activities. And then Toby Anderson is with us also, and she drives seniors where they need to go, often to their medical appointments, right?
Yes, Toby? I do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So Rich is sort of new to the Pioneer Home, a couple years there, and he really wanted Bob and Toby to come with him because he said they knew a lot of the history and stories about the Pioneer Home. So that's why we have a full house here today. And we have a special treat later. I just want to let you know we are going to hear from a resident of the Pioneer Home. Bob Larson has willingly agreed to call into the show about 2:15, and he's going to tell us a little bit about he's a lifelong Alaskan, a little bit about the early days of Anchorage and what he remembers as a boy and some of the big events, the bonfire for statehood and the earthquake and just his career here in Anchorage. So we're looking forward to hearing from Bob. So I'm going to go back to you, Rich. And actually, before I do that, I just want to throw out the numbers for our listeners in case people have thought of a question or a shout out they want to give. If you're in Anchorage, you can call 550-8433 or statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. And if you're too shy to talk on the radio, we'll take your email. You can email us at hometownalaskapublic.org, and we'll try to read those over the air and get your questions answered. So anyway, back to you, Rich. I wanted to start with a little bit of history, and I know that Bob and Toby can jump in here too, but let's talk about where these came from and where there's more than one Pioneer Home, but where did the first one begin?
The first one was in Sitka in 1913, and it was written out in the original territorial charter. I believe it's actually Article 1 that the folks from the territorial Congress were going to develop a pioneer home for miners and folks who were down on their luck and needed a place to stay, so that these Alaskans would be taken care of, and they moved them into an old Marine or Army military barracks in Sitka, and that was 100 years ago. So I'm sure they're going to have a nice celebration down there later this summer.
Oh yeah, that's great. And I want to let folks know on our website we have a couple of links, and I've included this little history of the Pioneer Homes that we're going to talk about a little bit here. So if you go to alaskapublic.org, Hometown Alaska, you'll see these links and you can read them yourself, including material from the state, you know, the Health and Social Services, the Division of Pioneer Homes. But anyway, there's an organization or a publication, an online publication out of Ketchikan called Sit News, and a writer named June Allen did a really nice little history and kind of captured the flavor of 1913 when the territorial government was getting rolling, and they decided that they really wanted to do something for men who maybe had come up to strike it rich on the gold rush, but maybe not that many people struck it rich on the gold rush. Some went home, but some stayed. And in her history, she talks about how what they had in common was the raw country and the rugged lifestyle that they chose. So they banded together for common good, and they named themselves the Pioneers. So I don't know if that's official or not, but because I wondered, how did we get the name Pioneer Home? But maybe it dates all the way back just to these original guys.
Well, prior to that, Kathleen, the Pioneers of Alaska was created, I know, like in Nome.
And mm-hmm. There's one here, too, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And they have different igloos around the state. And I don't know, maybe that's where they came up with that name, because the Pioneers of Alaska were created quite a few years before 1913.
Okay, so they predate the Holmes. Maybe that's just what you called the original people, you know, the pioneers. So I thought it would be sort of fun. I was doing a little history searching here, and the first bill they passed was, well, one thing I read says it was giving women the right to vote. Whether that was first or second, I have no idea. And then the next one was deciding that they were going to form a pioneer home in Sitka. Before we started the show, we were talking about the history, and there's reference that Fairbanks was supposed to get a home at that time, too. But both homes were going to be near a hot springs, and the folks in Fairbanks couldn't decide which hot springs. So time passed, and it took a while for them to get a home, and they eventually did.
Well, when you live in Fairbanks, hot springs are very important.
Yes, there's a reason to argue about which one. So anyway, Rich, how many are there?
There are six homes, Fairbanks, Palmer, Anchorage, Juneau, Sitka, and Ketchikan.
And you've been to all of them?
I have. Yes.
In a previous life.
In a previous life, I was a licensing inspector, and I did the licensing for all the Pioneer homes before I took the position at this Anchorage home.
Yeah. And Anchorage is the largest.
It is, yes. We are 168 elders, going strong. Mm-hmm. The next largest is Fairbanks, and I believe they're 96 or 98.
Yeah. And I also, from my early reading, I learned women were not in the first one. Probably there were not that many women in the early days, gold mining and things like that, or they were staying with their families. But the state, the territorial legislature actually tried to accommodate them because they gave allowances for men who could not get into the pioneer home, and they doubled it for women just to sort of help out. So even back then they were thinking. I mean, they gave women the right to vote. It just seems like women had a special place even back then. So fast forward. I mean, the homes came online at different times. They didn't all. In fact, the Sitka home was rebuilt. That barracks, there was a little bit of history about what that, when they went to open that first place, the condition that building was in. I think I've got a little description of it. The pipes had frozen. That sounds familiar. The pipes had frozen and burst. This is the old military barracks that they were going to reset up for the pioneers. The windows were broken, and the building was in serious disrepair. Furniture had been removed, and all that remained was a three-oven range. Sitka merchants and volunteers responded, which is, you know, kind of heartwarming. So, but in 1934, they rebuilt that home in Sitka with WPA money.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And the home is still used today, and it's a historical landmark also. Yeah,
it's quite a pretty beautiful building. It's on the website. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's do you know what it's made out of? I mean, it looks yellow. Is it stone?
It's actually white.
It's white?
Yeah, or as far as I remember. Maybe it is yellow. It's been a few years since I've been there.
Yeah. Is it stone?
I believe it is stone. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And the crew there, the people there do a fantastic job of keeping it up. And the grounds in the springtime are some of the most beautiful grounds you've ever
seen.
That's
the kind of pictures that are on the website.
Yeah,
you're looking at from the flower beds up to this, it's a little bit on a hill, and it looks quite pretty. So.
With the first Pioneer Home in Sitka in 1913, they hired one employee, so they only had one employee. And then they charged the people who lived there $1 a day.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
So that person must have, I can only visualize what they did, you know. The maintenance person, the cook, the nurse, the doctor.
Yeah, the confidant, everything. Well, that makes me think, I didn't know how people got into the Pioneer Home. I thought you had to be a 50-year resident or whatever. Come to read that you had to be 65. Mm-hmm. And I think that you had to have some longevity, although that's been adjusted a little bit. But it's still generally the people who are in the Pioneer Home are the pioneers.
Right, yeah. It used to be you had to have, I think you had to be a resident for 10 years. It might have even been 20. But now it's only one. So somewhere along the line that was challenged, and the government at the time decided it was better to have it open for more people.
Right.
But when you walk through the doors, everybody that lives there is 20, 30, 40, 50 lifetime Alaskans.
Yeah.
You know, 50 years they've been up here. So.
Right, and had interesting work lives.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to hear a little bit from Bob Larson about that. So I wanted to read this little description of the barracks, because they were lamenting the fact that women weren't allowed. And so a fellow named Bob DeArmond wrote an article in 1997, something like that, and he said, it was not a place for women. A majority of the residents were old miners, much of whose speech was profane. Most were tobacco chewers, and although spittoons were numerous, their expectorations were not well aimed. The table manners were atrocious.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's the history of the Pioneer Homes. Yeah. It's not like that today. So let's see. How does somebody get a slot in a Pioneer Home?
Well, you have to be 65 years old, and as soon as you turn 65, you can put your name on our list, and 20 years down the road, however long it is when you're ready to move in, you can move your name from the inactive list to the active list, and your name goes on the active list based on the date that you originally signed up. So we have two lists, inactive and active.
But it still matters that you sign up.
But the sooner you sign up, the better, because once you go to the active list, if you've been on the inactive list for 20 years, your name's going to pop up pretty close to the top of the active list as opposed to somewhere towards the middle or the bottom.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Does somebody have to do anything when they're on the inactive list? Do they have to re-up every year?
They send out a questionnaire that basically just asks if you still live in Alaska. You have to maintain your residency in Alaska while you're on the list, or they will remove you. And then if you move back up for another year, they can put you back on.
But then you get a new date.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So they will ask you every year if you still live here, but that's the only responsibility you have when you're on the inactive list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on the active list, you say you go active when someone signals to you that they want to be on the active list. Is it, or do you have to be a certain age?
No, you don't have to be a certain age. You can be 65 as long as you're 65. Whenever you feel like you're ready to move in, things are more difficult for you. You just want a more social surrounding, whatever that reason might be. You just let us know, and we'll move your name over.
Mm-hmm.
And then when your name comes up, we've got a spot for you.
And then do you actually, when you move onto the active list, do you move to the bottom of it, or do you move according to the date that you...
According to the date that you initially applied.
That ranks you on the...
Right. So,
on the active list.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the longer you've been on the active list, the longer you've been on the inactive list,
the higher up
you'll be on the active list when you move over.
Okay. Yeah. The other thing I thought people might want to understand is who pays for it? And I know there's different tiers of what do you call it, care?
We have three levels of care, levels 1, 2, and 3. Level 1 is folks are very independent. A lot of them still drive. Occasionally we have folks that still actually work, and they go to their jobs every day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more independent living, and we provide the activities and meals, and services are available for them if they need it, but it's pretty independent. Level 2 is a step up from level 1, and it's when you start needing a little more help with your activities of daily living, if you need help bathing or dressing or help remembering to take your medications, at level 2 we'll manage your medications for you. And then level 3 is when you need more help, then you're a little less independent, you need some pretty significant amounts of help with your daily care. And
as you mentioned before, The Pioneer Home is not a nursing home. It is a residential home. It's an assisted living home.
It's assisted living, yes.
So it could be potentially that someone would need to move beyond the Pioneer Home to a more...
It happens, but very, very rarely. We have nurses on staff, and through the regulations that we operate under, we're able to pretty much take care of all the needs you will have.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few things that can come up. When you age, if you, for example, need to be on an IV for some reason continually, we can't manage that. So there are a couple of things medically that might mean that you'd need to move somewhere else. But for the most part, I would say 99% of the folks that move in can stay there for the rest of their lives.
Definitely. It's really rare for anyone to ever move out because of a service that we can't provide. It seems like maybe once every year, once every 5 years, maybe. Even.
Yeah, I mean, I've been there for 2 years, and I think I can only think of one person off the top of my head that actually wasn't able to make it back from a hospital stay. Yeah.
Right. And, I'd like to know Bob Montague. I'm going to get Bob Montague and Bob Larson mixed up for sure. How long have you worked there?
I've been there 23 years,
And have you always been the activities director, or did you just work all around the home?
When I first started, I was a recreation therapist in our area, which is where our Alzheimer's and ADRD area is for people with related dementia, for about a year or so. And then I was promoted into the next higher position, which I've had, you know, for over 20 years.
Yeah. I would say you like your job.
Yeah, there's it's more than just a paycheck working at the Piner Home. It's just very rewarding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a lot of variety to the type of job I have, too, which I really thrive on.
It's different every day.
It is. every hour seems different, and I like that, you know.
Yeah.
Some people don't like that, but it fits me perfect.
And yeah.
I was amazed when I started the amount of people that work there that have worked there for over 15 years. I mean, it's a true testament to how much people enjoy being
there.
Yeah.
And Toby, how about you? You've been there a long time.
I have been there for almost 30 years. I started in February of 1983, and I've worked in a lot of different departments. I started in the kitchen as a waitress, went up, I made my way up to head cook, and then I was the manager of housekeeping, and I quit for a couple of years because I wanted to stay home with my daughter, and I came back as the bus driver. They kept coming through my line at Safeway. I did that as a fun job, and they kept saying, you need to come back. So I did. I came back, and I'm here. I've been here for going on my 13th year. In
wow.
a row again.
Wow, that's great. Well, I did promise that we were going to have a call from a resident of the Anchorage Piner Home, and he has dialed in. Hi, Bob.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hey, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Oh. Well, it's great to hear from you, Bob. Thank you for calling in.
You bet. My pleasure.
I really wanted the show to have someone who lives in the Pioneer Home join us because, you know, people who work there is one thing and they're good people, but we wanted to really hear it from the horse's mouth. So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself, Bob, and, you know, where were you born and what kind of work did you do?
Okay, that's a good question. I was born in 1947. No, that's when I graduated from high school. I was born in 1929 in Juneau, Alaska. Lived there most of my life until I was sent with my parents to Anchorage, Alaska, where they built a house and I lived in that. Went to school here, grade school, and some high school in Juneau. Back again, back and forth, Juneau, Anchorage, between my mother and my new stepfather and my mother. So then to get to your question is, what did I do? What kind of work did I do?
Yeah, kind of work did you do as a young man?
When I got to be a little bit older, I did everything from fishing, logging, and basically heavy equipment and truck driving to build the Alaska Highway.
Wow, wow.
I did that for years and loved learning how to swear.
We're not going to ask you to show us, okay? Well, that's great.
In the construction camps, you know, you have to do that sometimes because things don't go quite as well on the end of a pick and shovel or a truck or something else.
Yeah, sometimes you need a little colorful language to make it work.
At least I made you laugh, and that's probably one of the next questions. What I like about and what I've learned about living in the Pioneer Home. But go ahead, ask me anything you want.
Well, I wanted you to tell me about being a paperboy because you told me a story about that. I thought it was kind of interesting.
I did.
And encountering the soldiers. There were soldiers in a bunker. So tell me about that.
I will. I went for a job selling papers for the Anchorage Daily Times with the editor of the paper. And they gave me a paper route, which went out the road south to where they had a big house on the bank and a shed next to it overlooking Cook Inlet. And that was a residence for about 16 GIs that were trained to man a cannon or a heavy projectile in case we were invaded by the sea from the enemy at the time, which was Japan. And in that particular home of my over a mile journey down on the railroad tracks to get there to give them their paper, they welcomed me in the wintertime, the cold weather, to come on in, Bob, warm up, we'll get to know each other. And I watched them build exercise equipment out of coffee cans filled with cement on a pole to work their muscles, and but they were more interested in getting the newspaper and getting me warmed up so I could get back home.
That's pretty sweet. Now, I met you the other day, and you told me that you were a little reluctant at the beginning to go into the Pioneer Home. So take us there. What was that about, and how have you adjusted?
I was very reluctant to get in because I built my own home in Anchorage. Another story on that on a sideline. You're not asking that, but I'm here because my son and my lady friend Mary at my home that lives there with my checkbook, she are the ones that decided it might be the best place for me to get some assistance in living out a lot of my life. Well, my first reaction was, no, I'm doing fine here at home, but I wasn't doing fine. I could have been a little bit of a burden on my family by my own attitude of being self-reliant. But when I finally got here, they asked if I could get admitted here, and they explained the rules of admittance and what the cost was. And so once I got into the Pioneer Home, I'm a curious man. So I was happy to be able to walk pretty good, and they gave me a little extra help with a four-wheel vehicle I call my horse. I can lean on that, take packages around or whatever. But I can get around the Pioneer Home, and I can look to see some of the early friends and acquaintances that built our estate and were living earlier in the Pioneer Home. I get a chance to read that. I get a chance to learn about so many things because, again, that's my curiosity. I can talk all day, so you change.
Well, thanks, Bob. I wanted to ask you if you have, there's some big events that happened, like the time when the state became a state, when Alaska became a state. Do you remember the bonfire out on the park strip, and did you participate?
I did. I threw some lumber on it, and it was at the south end of the west end of the park strip was where the bonfire was built, which at that time was the park strip was a rejuvenation of the Anchorage's first landing strip, and I remember that too, when the planes, the early flights of Anchorage came right on 9th Street where the park strip is now and landed their airplanes. Go ahead.
Wow. How about the earthquake, the big earthquake in 64?
Well, that was great. I was working at the Anchorage Westford Hilton Hotel, but I was home at the time with my wife, Carol Larson, who was running for the president of the Anchorage School Board and the first romper room teacher, and she just hatched a baby chick for my two sons, Mark and Alex. And they were showing me their chicken when the earthquake lasted. And then your next question might be, well, tell me about the earthquake. And my best answer is, if you got a wristwatch on or something similar to tell time, give me the first 5 minutes. And then give me the next 5 minutes, because that's how long that earthquake lasted.
Yeah, long time. Yeah. Did your house stay standing?
My home didn't have that much. My chimney did. A few other things. It didn't break anything, but I was worried about it. And because I built it, I knew where it could fall down. I was watching the trees, and they were taking a similar avenue of falling down, and I didn't want my family to be a part of that, or me, or anybody else.
Mm-hmm. So you survived it okay?
I did. I survived it. It was scary, and I get back to the hotel, and don't ask me questions. I could be all day on the phone with you on those from other parts of Alaska.
Oh, well, I wanted to also ask you, recently we had a bad storm in Anchorage, and that big flagpole on the park strip fell down, and I heard that you were one of the people that got motivated to alert people to that. So tell us about that.
Be happy to. Yes. When we call it our flag, the big flag, it was actually 30 feet long and 15 feet wide. And it fell down because of a structured failure of a Sitka spruce tree. Sitka, Alaska donated a Sitka spruce for the city of Anchorage at the time, and it was located on 4th Avenue down there on the next to the old city hall. It's now the Baratrovich Park, right next on 4th Avenue there. But that was a Sitka spruce, and it broke, and the flag fell down with the pole onto the ground. So my Boy Scout mind said, well, gosh, if the flag touches the ground, we got to do something with our American flag. But the people in the home said, we miss our flag. So somehow somebody from the Anchorage Daily News got a hold of me and asked me some questions like you are. And they said, would you give us some ideas of what the people of the poem, the Anchorage Pioneer Home, miss? And I said, one of them is seeing our beautiful American flag, which is no longer there, and calling some other people I don't need to talk about, the mayor and the other people that I was curious about. But I was curious. I said, when are we going to get our a replacement flag? Well, next summer. It's still going to be next summer of this year at a very high price, new flag that will be stronger than the one we had from Sitka. That's a partial answer to my question, but the main answer was that young people found out from the article from the Daily News about some of the residents of the Anchorage Pioneer Home missing the flag, and that was enough gumption of the young people to say, well, let's do something about that, and they did. I've got a couple names, and one of the girls' names was Raven, and the other name was, wait a minute, what did I his name was Emery. And these were two people, and there was a bagpipe player that found a wooden flagpole, and they asked if we could set it up on the park strip. And I said, well, I'm sure you could, because we don't have a flag there now, and we understand that some of the people miss it. Could we have a little report? I talked to the Anchorage Daily News, and I was glad to do that. And they took a picture of me looking out where it came up from and down. Mm-hmm. But these young people, bless their hearts, with some of the guidelines from the bagpipe player and the Emery, who cleans the grounds over there for the Veterans Memorial, they're all worried about the flagpole. And I'm saying, who's going to do something about this? And the people who are going to do something about this, in my mind, for anybody that was listening or reading about in the Anchorage Daily News about the people in the Pioneer Home missing our flag, I'm sure somebody would come up with something. You know what happened? The young people come up with the flagpole, a smaller one, a smaller flag, the whole thing, and it was up in nothing flat.
Wow, that's a great story. I want to ask you one more question, Bob. And thank you for telling us about that. It's obviously that you cared and were motivated to do something and connected up with the right people, and it happened. So my last question for you, Bob, is we like to talk to our elders about, you know, their wisdom and their advice, and so I thought you could leave us with some tip from your 84 years about what's a good approach to life, what's worked for you. So just give us one example.
Oh, give me an entry on that again, just one little
sure,
thing.
Just tell us one bit of advice from your 84 years that's helped you. Maybe it's your curiosity, maybe it's your good humor. I don't know. What's helped you get through?
The thing that helped me get through my first year and second year and hopefully more is the curiosity and sense of humor and learning from the things that are offered to all of our members when we get in the Pioneer Home is a schedule of events and menus for a whole week.
So you have a lot in front of you to look at and know that you can do.
The point is, they are offerings. We don't have to go. We don't have to eat. We can lay down and die if we want to, but we don't. And what I've learned is we are so well cared of. All of us. I'm speaking because a lot of people can't, and a lot of people need help getting onto their wheelchairs or getting into the elevator. Or every bit of living in the Anchorage Pioneer Home at various parts of the hotel, I say hotel, of the Pioneer Home, or being able to keep your eye open for what you can do for somebody else or help them but not get in their way.
Well, Bob, it's been great talking to you, and I thank you for taking the time to call in today. I thought it would be a real treat for our listeners to hear from a resident of the Anchorage Pioneer Home, and you were such a good sport. So I want to say thank you so much for taking the time to talk to the listeners of Hometown Alaska. So thank you, Bob.
Thank you, and do it for some more pioneers.
All right. Bye-bye, Bob. All right. Well, that was great. I think he was just terrific, and I really appreciate that he did that. If you've just joined us, we're talking about the Anchorage Pioneer Home, and I have Rich Seville with me, Bob Monique, and Toby Anderson, all people who work at the Pioneer Home. We just heard from Bob Larson, who is a resident of the Pioneer Home, and you're listening to Kathleen McCoy. This is Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy, your host. Today, we've been talking about the Anchorage Pioneer Home and the Alaska Pioneer Homes. And we were just listening to Bob Larson, who's 84 and a resident of the Anchorage Pioneer Home. And he was just telling us a little bit about his early days in Anchorage, paper route, the bonfire on the park strip when the Alaska became a state. All those kinds of things, living through the earthquake. And a little bit of advice for all of us carrying on here in life is to have a good sense of humor and, help people. So sure. Let me just reintroduce our guests and put out our phone number in case anybody does have questions. I invited you to give a shout out to anyone you know at the Anchorage Pioneer Home. I know they're listening today. Or if you know someone who works there and you just want to say thanks to them, or if you just have questions about how to get on the list, we've covered a little bit of that in the first half hour. So let me welcome back Rich Seville.
Hello, thank you.
He's our administrator at the Anchorage Pioneer Home. Bob Monique is the activities director, so recreation and fun times, right?
That's right, yeah.
And Toby has done many things at the Pioneer Home, many different departments, but right now is really driving folks to medical appointments, I think.
Yes,
which is probably
correct.
Keeps you pretty busy.
Yes, it does.
Is it a Monday through Friday kind of thing?
Yes, Monday through Friday.
All day long?
9 to 3, I drive, but yeah. I do other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do some paperwork, and I also not just take people. I also pick up prescriptions. I do banking.
All things
related whatever they
to,
need, like yeah. a courier.
Yeah.
I do a lot of things.
Yeah. So Bob Larson, the resident, was talking about helping people in the home, and it made me think about, there's a staff at the Pioneer Home. I think you said
it's about 200.
200, but really there's a lot more that goes on. Oh, let me throw out our numbers. I didn't do that, did I? I don't think so. 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Let's go back to that topic of who in the community actually steps up for the Pioneer Home here in Anchorage.
Well, in Anchorage, we're incredibly fortunate to have so many wonderful people that want to volunteer and do volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just amazed. I never cease to be amazed. I've been there for about 23 years, and my phone just rings off the hook. We don't have to advertise.
You mean for people who want to?
They want to volunteer.
So they just come in the door, do they?
They call, yeah.
Uh-huh. Do they have an idea of what they want to do, or do they just say to you, Bob, what do you need?
Some people have a general idea what they'd like to do, or maybe something specific. Some people, they know they want to help. They love the elderly. And for different reasons, they want to help the elderly mm-hmm. in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And so we offer suggestions on what are based upon our needs. And basically what I do with the staff I work with is we link up the volunteers with the needs of the residents at the Pioneer Home.
So what's an example? I mean, there might be, are there conversations? People just want to have conversations or?
There are, yeah. I just had a call today. There was a woman who has a one-year-old, a child, and wants to visit.
Just wants to come in and visit seniors?
Yeah, Yeah, so we're going to link her up, you know. And there's certain times that are better than others, obviously, you know, just like for anybody's home. And then so we will meet with her, and we keep it pretty streamlined. But, you know, they fill out a volunteer application form, and we give them a tour and go from there and get them scheduled to come in. That's
We're going to come back to volunteers. I'm going to go to the phones just to talk to folks who want to talk about the Pioneer Home. Hello, Louise. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Hi. I just have a quick story about the Pioneer Home in Sitka. When I was in college, I wanted to come visit my grandmother in at the Pioneer's Home. She was 83 years old. I had only met her once when I was a child, and I was very much looking forward to hearing about all her adventures in Alaska and her life. And she died a few weeks before I graduated from college. So I ended up coming up for her funeral. And the people at the Pioneer Home were very, very kind and told us about her and her husband and their enjoyment of their time in the Pioneer Home. And then they led us downstairs into the basement and showed us boxes and boxes of my grandmother's journals and diaries and photos and everything going back to 1900.
Wow.
And I took them home, read everything. Her journals from her time on an island in the middle of nowhere in the 1950s, down by Ketchikan, and she had a secret 1918 diary that was written in code.
A code?
Just a fantastic trove of stuff, and I was so happy they kept it so well there.
That's awesome.
And so I'm writing a novel based on.
I was just going to say, you surely are writing a book.
Yeah. So they enjoyed their time at the Pioneer Home, and it was just it's a beautiful building down there, and it just was a real good experience.
Oh, that's wonderful. What was your grandmother's name?
Her name was Smokey Johnstone.
Oh, right.
That's a great name. That's a great name. And when can we look for your book, Louise? And is it about your grandmother and her life? I mean, or are you going to fictionalize it?
It's that one year that she kept a diary in 1918 when she was 20 years old. And she was a society girl, very proper family, but she was sneaking around at night and drinking. And she got married to an ex-con.
Whoa!
She wrote it in code so her mother couldn't read it, and I had to break the code. It was just great fun.
Is it all true? Do you think it's all true?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was some, you know, some blanks I need to fill in, but I have all the letters her boyfriends wrote to her. She had, like, six different boyfriends
proposed
to her that year. So I'm piecing it together, and it's a really neat seeing her from different points of view. And
that's really a treasure trove. That's an amazing story. That's great.
Yeah,
well,
very neat.
That's a wonderful story, Louise. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow.
I can't wait to read that book.
I know. I want to read that book, too.
And we were talking about volunteers, how they volunteer, and it also ties in with her phone call, and is that we have a program in which we call it the Life Story Project. And we actually interview residents, and preferably with their families also if we can, and give them a CD life story or other stories of their life, you know.
Oh, that's so is that an ongoing project? And do people sign up for it, or do you approach people and say, we'd like to do this?
Well, yeah, we announce it, and then people can sign up. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's all voluntary. We took a little bit of a break for a while, but it's going to be starting up in another 2 weeks from now. And we actually kind of mimicked our StoryCorps.
Right.
Yeah.
StoryCorps.
Because they came to the Pioneer Home about a few years ago and interviewed 13 people. And so we duplicated, where I was able to get the same type of equipment and things like that. But it's a wonderful gift for people to record their stories or their whole life. And give it to their family or friends if
they
want to.
That's really a nice idea. Mm-hmm. Do you maintain those? I mean, if, for example, someone wants to do research for a book, like Louise was, you know, do you have those on file? And is that something people, or are they at the library? Mm-hmm. Or?
No, we have a copy of them, but so far that hasn't occurred, and I'm not sure about confidentiality or not.
Yeah,
I'm sure if we got a release from family.
Yeah, you might have to do that.
Let people listen to it, but otherwise we would keep it for
ourselves.
For
the family.
And then we give the copies. You know, the residents have as many copies as they want. So a lot of times, even during Christmas time, they'll want like 20 copies.
They
you know,
want to give it to family.
Yeah, and there's some wonderful stories too.
Oh, I bet.
You know,
stories
of the Great Depression or coming to Alaska or what it was like to be born and raised in Alaska. Or,
oh, I'm sure.
There's a woman who was born and raised in Nome and went into great detail of how her parents caught herring and they made pickle herring, the whole old recipes on how they did it. Just really fascinating. Yeah,
that's great. That's that's the thing you don't want to lose. You know, you want to. So that's an ongoing project. And is it just they sit down with a tape recorder or do you interview them, Bob?
Well, we have we interview the residents. Yeah, we give them questions ahead of time, a week or two ahead of time, and also encourage them to have their family or friends in with the interview. And then they can edit those questions. They might want to add to it or take some things out.
Right.
Yeah. And so, but we encourage people that are interested to contact us if they want to volunteer for this project, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In other words, to do the interviewing?
Yeah. We train people to do that, you know.
Boy, that would be a pretty rich opportunity, I would think, to hear some stories and spend time. I was thinking about World War II. We probably don't have any more World War II vets in the Pioneer Home in Anchorage anymore, maybe.
Actually, there are.
There still are a few.
Quite a few.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Do they talk much about their time or not really?
We talk once in a while. I'm in the American Legion post number 4. It's in the Anchorage Pioneers Home. It's one of the only posts that's in an actual home like the home is. And like the people that just called in, he's one of our members. And we talk about that stuff. And we let them give a talk about their lives and what they did in the military or when they were growing up. And we have that the first Friday of every month.
Oh, really?
Up on the fifth floor. Yep.
Is that open to the public or?
It's all, yeah, they can come up too. And even the wives, the families that were members, because when the guys or the gals are in the military, they're also serving either at home or somewhere. So they do get to talk about that stuff. I just had a gentleman who brought me a book with the ship he was on, and it was excellent. It had all kinds of stuff. It showed pictures. It was very informative.
So it was World War II, he was in the Navy, maybe in the Pacific, maybe, something like that. Wow.
Yes.
How about, do you get much interest from young people? I'm thinking about projects in school that they might have to do. Is that something that comes
Absolutely.
Up?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Frequently.
Yeah, we actually had a West High School class a couple of years ago. We had a lady turning, was it 99?
99.
Yeah, yeah. And she loves to dance. And so they came in and put on a 50s style high school prom for her. And I mean, they had Elvis cutouts and the music and they went all out and it was fantastic. Yeah.
That's great.
And she had a wonderful time.
That's really sweet.
Yeah.
And do you even know how they made the connection?
Well, it was interesting. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, it's okay. You know.
Well, what happened is I got a call from West High, and they had just watched a movie. It was I forget what class it was, community service or something like that. And they said, they called me, and they said, we just saw this movie about a woman who was young during World War II, and her husband loved to dance. And we would like to coordinate a dance, like a senior prom or something like that, for somebody that lives there. And I said, well, that sounds great, you know.
Sure.
when do you want to do this? And they gave me the date, right? And it's on a Saturday. And I look on the calendar, and lo and behold, it happens to be her actual 99th birthday. And she absolutely loves the dance. And as Rich was mentioning, you know, that's what she wanted to do when she turned 99 as well as 100. And she's still there now, 100 years old. Yeah.
Wow.
It's just amazing. It was like it was meant to be.
Yeah. Like somebody was pulling the strings somewhere.
And she loved the 50s too. And they did this huge 50s party. It was just unbelievable.
Oh my gosh. That's great.
Yeah.
That's really fun.
There's stories like that happen quite a bit. Yeah.
And so the kids came to the party too?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The students from West High, put on the party, and I helped with the whole party, decorated and everything.
That's a really fun idea. What are some of the other things that happen that you know, the interface between the community and the Pioneer Home?
Well, we have people of all ages, and there's just literally hundreds of people that volunteer at the Pioneer Home each through the course of a year. You know, it's hard to estimate the hours. It's got to be at least 10,000, maybe 40,000 hours. I'm not one to ever want to over-exaggerate, but it's hard to determine. There's individuals, there's families, and you have schools, you know, public schools, private schools, university students, the military, the National Guard, private businesses, nonprofit agencies. I don't know what else.
Yeah, we have a Christmas party every year sponsored by Prudential, Vista, Jack White Real Estate. They've been doing it for almost 35 years, I think. And they come in every year, and we get a list of gifts, gift requests from all the elders who live in the home. Three items usually each that they'd like to have for Christmas, and we get it to the Prudential folks, and they put a tree on in their corporate lobby, and people pick a name off of there, and every year everybody in the home gets at least one gift, usually all three, from the folks at Prudential, Jack White, Vista Real Estate.
And
and I'm sure they don't do it for the promo or the PR, but you know, we do thank them profusely for the support they've shown.
35 years is a really a very generous.
And they don't mess around. I mean, people have gotten flat screen TVs and iPads and expensive sewing machines.
Yeah.
So,
oh my gosh!
I mean, they really
amazing.
Take care of the elders. It's really fantastic to see.
Yeah, that's. Is there anybody else you particularly want to thank? Since that's an important
part.
There's
so many people. I was almost reluctant to mention names because you know you can't mention them all. We could probably be here for a few hours even talking about
a reading of names.
Wonderful volunteers from our community.
What about the Day of Caring?
We have the United Way Day of Caring every year, and that's in the fall. And we have private businesses that link up with United Way that come in, from ConocoPhillips and
they come in and paint
places.
And
some of the banks
and help with activities and things. The Pioneers of Alaska have been involved with the Anchorage Pioneer Home since it was first started. And since the home opened, they've sponsored a monthly birthday party and a strawberry festival.
Nice.
And other things during the year. The Master Gardeners of Anchorage, they adopted the whole front of the Pioneer Home, and it's absolutely beautiful with flowers.
That's really nice.
That they grow from either seeds or, seedlings. And it's almost a tourist attraction, really. You see a lot of tourists out there in the summertime taking pictures.
Snapping
just beautiful. Because obviously, the people that live there, work, and visit take a lot of pride in the Pioneer Home. There's Coolis, Air Guard, J-Bear, not only the soldiers and the airmen, but their families also volunteer. There's just so many people. The Lions Club, the Masons, Alpha Lodge Number 1, on and on, the Senior Companion Program, the Chugiak Mountain Range Cloggers.
The Masons actually, they do gifts for all the elders every Christmas, and they do gifts for all the ladies on Mother's Day, and they sponsor a Father's Day barbecue for us as well. And they also actually run it's called the Pioneer Poke. We have a little gift store, snack shop, and they volunteer to operate that for us as well. They've been really fantastic to the elders in the Pioneer Home
That's
well.
That's really great.
We have a lot of musicians also that have been volunteering for like maybe over 10, 20 years. The Chugiak Mountain Range Cloggers, Pat Went, he plays the guitar. There's people that come in and do gospel music every single week. Even if it's a holiday, they're there,
I wonder if the volunteers, if it's maybe a chance for them to connect with an older generation that maybe their family's outside, and that this is a way that they...
That happens a lot.
They can't.
Especially with people being transferred to Alaska, whether it's in the private sector or in the military. And they might have grown up having grandparents, but because of the situation they're in now, they don't. But they have children, and they want their children to have that experience. And I've actually met people... recently who actually came to the Pioneer Home when they were a child, and now they're an adult, and they have kids, and they're bringing their kids in to volunteer because they had such a positive experience. Wow. That's really neat. Yeah.
So what might a family, by the way, I just want to remind our listeners, we're talking about the Alaska Pioneer Homes, kind of focusing on Anchorage because that's where we are. And we have Rich Seville, Bob Monique, and Toby Anderson. And we just have a few more minutes. So if you have questions, it's a good time to call 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752 or an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. I was sort of wondering, you know, if someone comes in with a child, what kind of volunteer activity would they likely do?
Well, it depends on the time of day, but we have a lot of different lounge areas where people gather. It's a very social environment. It's one of the main advantages of living at the Pioneer Home. And so the residents just love children, and it's part of our philosophy is to involve residents with children. Mm-hmm. And so they just sit, and it's like sitting around the coffee table with your grandparents and have coffee and juice and talk.
And just talk. Yeah.
What about the little ones that just came in and did bingo?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had a group of, they were adorable. they help bingo. They'll sit next to a resident and provide assistance. You know, there might be some people that might not be able to hear or physically be able to
mark the bingo card. Yeah. And so they do it for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And were these little kids or were they?
They were small. And I actually, you know, we have a pet program. You know, people that live there have pets. Staff can bring their pets to work, and there's visiting pets. And I have a great Pyrenees. I don't know if you know about them.
They're big, aren't they?
Yeah, they're very large.
Like a small pony.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, and he's really super kind and gentle. And he was about the same height as those little kids that came in to play bingo. And I wish I had a picture. There's about 15 of those kids just surrounded him, and they were petting him and hugging him.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, things like that happen, you know.
Yeah, I did. I saw a cat while I was there, and as I was leaving, I saw a woman carrying out a dog in a small container.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody said, oh, you know, where's your dog? And she said, oh, right here. I'm taking her home. Yeah. Yeah. So any birds?
We have birds, and we have fish also.
Wow. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, because you're the activities director, about this idea, you know, what kind of activities are the residents really interested in? I heard something about the men's talking circle, and there's a women's opportunity. What goes on at those? Are they organized? Do they have topics, or is it just a free-for-all?
Well, one thing is, there's a total of 7 of us in activities at the Pioneer Home, so we have some wonderful staff. We all work together, mm-hmm. and Toby, even though she's our driver, she's also in our department, so if there are times when she's not driving, she helps.
Mm-hmm.
But so the activities are actually planned and coordinated based upon the interest and needs of the residents.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so we have a wide range of activities from exercise to arts and crafts to baking. Some of the most popular ones are the baking activities and also bingo. We play bingo 4 to 5 times a week.
Hmm.
Yeah, big time. It's just really popular.
Mm-hmm.
They like the social activities, mm-hmm. Exercise.
Yeah, I looked at a little greenhouse that was a project of one mm-hmm. of your residents.
Yeah, one of our elders has adopted that. We have a greenhouse area on the 5th floor, and it gets good sun, and we keep a couple of couches in there, and she takes care of all the plants in there, and it's beautiful. And
yeah, it's really, really nice, yeah.
In the summertime, we had the Boy Scouts built 16 4-by-6-foot wheelchair-accessible planter boxes,
uh-huh.
and the residents have their own raised flower boxes out on our 3rd-floor deck, and that's incredibly popular also.
Very nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've got a request that I meant to get to, which was, how is it paid for? We started to get there, but we didn't really go there.
There are a number of different ways. Private pay, if you're able. Sometimes private insurance, long-term care insurance will pay for it. If you do not have the funding available to pay for it privately, you can apply for a Medicaid waiver, which will cover basically everything, all your needs there. And if you don't qualify for that for some reason, but you still don't have the money to be able to pay for it, the state has something called payment assistance, which the state will subsidize the cost of care for you to be there as long as you need to be there. So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Once you move in, if you don't want to move out, if you run out of money, you can still stay.
Is there ceiling cap for, I think I was reading in some material, $98,000 or something like that, but I didn't understand the reference. Is there a cap to what resources you might have, or is that just an archaic old reference?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the cap for payment assistance. Yeah. If there is one, I have not familiar with anybody who's reached it yet. Yeah. So,
do you have a feel for, at the Anchorage Pioneer Home, how many people are, is it like one-third, one-third, one-third in terms of the payment?
Yeah, it's pretty close. I think we have probably of the 168 folks, we probably have 38 or 40 or so of Medicaid waiver, and then the rest are probably maybe only two or three private insurance, and the rest are kind of probably half and half between private pay and payment assistance,
mm-hmm,
I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you, Rich, got any feel for, like, for a resident for a year? I'm not asking what they pay, but what does it cost? Do you have? I'm just looking at the cost that maybe the Pioneer Home has to bear.
Boy, that's a good question.
It's, I mean, probably, is it like 4,000 or 3,000?
Yeah, I mean, per year, it depending on the level of care you're in,
it varies.
But it could be anywhere from, say, 25 to maybe 75,000 a year, something like that, that it costs to actually take care of someone for a year.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some of that, again, is being paid for with private insurance,
right.
or Medicaid, or a payment assistance from the state.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, we talked early on about different levels of care. It's an assisted living home. It is not a nursing home. Independence, one of the things I wanted to touch on was the challenge of running a home where really you're not the boss of these folks.
Mm-hmm.
you really aren't hurting them. They're choosing to live here. So what are some of the challenges of giving them independence but also making sure it's a safe environment? Do you run into problems with that?
I think that is the biggest challenge, is trying to create a safe environment where people can do the things that they want to do and want to continue to do that they've done all their lives without putting themselves in jeopardy while they do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's definitely the biggest challenge, is striking that balance between, folks making decisions for themselves and choosing what they want to do, and trying to help them by offering them a surrounding that are safe and conducive to be able to do those things in a safe way.
Yeah. I noticed there was a beauty parlor there, by the way.
That's very popular.
A person who comes in and cuts hair and beautifies people that want to be beautified.
Yes, yeah. we have three folks actually, mm-hmm, that come in different days of the week. Mm-hmm. They're open, I think, Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's great. Yeah. Well, we're just about out of time. Thank you. I have to thank all of you. Rich Seville, who's the administrator of the Anchorage Pioneer Home, and Bob Monique, who's the activities director, and Toby Anderson, who's a driver. And we want to thank Bob Larson, who called in from the Anchorage Pioneer Home. Hometown Alaska will be back next week with host Shelley Wade. Please find us on the web at alaskapublic.org and join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yek, thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.